This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Mahara mai, no mai hoki mai, takatāpui, MVP Faf, Rainbow Fano. You're tuned into the Vlad Pride Hour here on Free FM 89.0 Independent Community Media. Live stream and podcast us via freefm.org.nz, via the accessmedia.nz app, TuneIn app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Flat out. Tuia ngā reo o te hāpuri, bringing together the voices of our community. That is Free FM's tagline, and Flat Out Pride absolutely supports that kaupapa kōrero. You're tuned into the station and the show that celebrates us, the Glid Fab Rainbow Whānau. We do news, views and interviews all for about our whānau. Us. All our indigenous, cultured, rainbow, all of those intersectional spaces, places and peeps throughout our hour. We're based here in Aotearoa, but we always bring what we can, what we know about our whānau. Lady H, on your mic for your Funky Friday. Welcome and welcome back. Love having you on board, e te whānau. I have a line up for you. On your show, we have questions newly out trans women have for experienced trans women. Compliments of as/is. How queer characters have evolved in animation. So I know a lot of our whānau like video online, maybe Dungeons and Dragons, animation, all those creatives. Creative aspects or creative forms of media. This talks about how queer characters have evolved in animations from ways back to now. After that, pre-colonial attitudes to sex and gender fluidity. Now this is from the spin-off, and it was a while back, and they're talking to Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri. We've got what's hot and happening for your coming weekend here in Aotearoa, and of course the beats peppered through there. That is our lineup for y'all. Hope you are well, healthy, enjoying your holidays with your tamariki. So here in Aotearoa, it is coming into winter, and it is holiday time for our babies, our kids, our teens, and our babies. So yes, let's get into the goodness, whānau. First up, 13 questions newly out trans women have for experienced trans women. Compliments of as is. And then we'll go into a beat. Transgender duet, male and female voice, 3 octaves. This is compliments of Zoe Alexandria. I don't know the name of the song, but you have to check them out to find out more. Stay tuned.
We have gathered the questions from the internet, and now we're here to review those questions, have a little conversation about it.
We're just getting a vibe. We got a vibe now. Trans girl vibe.
Our first question is, how do you identify?
I identify as a trans woman, Afro-Latina.
I identify as a non-binary trans femme.
I just identify as a trans woman, proud and loud.
I identify as a queer trans woman.
I identify as a non-binary trans femme. Like, a lot of people have tried to, you know, box me in and just be like, trans woman. And you know, to an extent, I do identify with that, but I still feel very much like a blob.
We are butt meat socks, for mm-hmm. sure. At what point after meeting someone new do you come out to them, if ever?
From the jump. That's the first thing anyone knows about me. I want to know if you're on my side or not.
I usually don't come out if I'm just like meeting someone as an acquaintance.
I don't know. I feel like just based off the way I look, like it's kind of a given sometimes because I'm still like early in this. But sometimes I'm just like, I just am myself, and if they ask, then I'll let them know.
I never wanted to go stealth, which for those of you who don't know is basically where you become cis-passing and don't tell anyone that you're trans.
In the beginning stages of my transition, I lived a stealth life, and so I wasn't really forward about it just because I had this idea of like I wanted to blend in. But then as I got older, I felt like that's not like what I want to live.
How long did it take you to come out?
Well, I came out at 19, and I kind of came out within like 6 months of me kind of realizing I was trans. I started hormones basically right right away. I was lucky enough to have access to an informed consent clinic. So I just kind of showed up one day, signed off, like, I know the risks, I know what's going to happen, I'm going to grow boobs, I'm aware of that.
Decades, literally decades.
It wasn't until, like, I became 16 and I kind of got, you know, presented and exposed to the LGBT community. I saw community and I saw myself, and it was the first time that I met somebody that was trans. Instantly, I was like, oh my God, that's what I am.
I was out as a gay man. It wasn't until I was 22 and I was, like, for the first time, surrounded by so many trans people because of where I worked at. I started medically transitioning like a little bit over a year ago.
Everyone comes out at their own pace. I know people who start hormones and don't come out socially until they're on hormones for like 3 years.
Do you ever question your gender?
All the time, every day. And it's part of the fun for me. It's like adapting and changing.
After being out for a while, you just come kind of disillusioned with gender as a whole. Never questioning that I'm trans. The more I've been out, the more I've surrounded myself with queer people who also are genderqueer and non-binary. And it's been empowering in that way to continue re-examining gender.
For me, I've never questioned my gender. I've always felt affirmed with who I am and the gender I've always wanted to identify as.
One thing I love about being visibly trans is everywhere you go, if I see a trans person on the bus, we have a look that's if it gets real, I got your back, girl.
Our next question is, how long did it take for you to feel comfortable with your gender?
Like maybe 3 years. I was lucky enough to pay a ton of money to get my face done, was on hormones for like 3 years at that point. So yeah, it took me about 3 years.
No, thanks for answering this question specifically, because this is one of the questions that I had going into this. You know, this past year that I have been medically transitioning, you look in the mirror and you're like, what the f*** am I doing? You know, it's a big step to leave like what you're comfortable with and what people are used to.
A year on hormones.
Before 16, it was like when I was not comfortable.
I don't know if I feel fully comfortable because, I mean, my mom, I still don't haven't told her. Trying to leave the house is always hard. I'm always procrastinating on that. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be like to work and stuff just because I'm mentally preparing myself, changing clothes. Like, do I want to even show off? You know, with the body changes, like, do I want to show it off or do I want to cover up? It's just more of a safety thing usually.
Right. Did understanding your gender change your understanding of your sexuality?
Yes, I realized I was bi. I was out as a gay man before, and it felt not quite right to be in that kind of relationship as a gay man with another gay man. It was like, something's off here. I can't quite put my finger on it. Of course it felt off. I was a woman being with a gay man.
I'm attracted to heterosexual men. Once I started finding myself, and that's when I was in a relationship, and then that's when I realized I was trans, and we ended up breaking up because I started to transition.
That's been an ongoing process for me. I identify as lesbian and date cis and trans women and non-binary people. And I kind of like don't really care what someone's genitals are. But my needs and tastes certainly changed quite a bit.
Well, I'm ready to dive into my lesbian era
Oh my God, yes.
So like I'm attracted to, I guess, men, but I'm also, there's moments of like also being attracted to other women.
One thing that for me has been a struggle in dating is just feeling like I was accepted by the lesbian community. Like on lesbian dating apps, a lot of people will say, real women only know trans girls.
I feel like at a certain point, if you've deconstructed gender enough to completely alter the way your body moves through the world, only like a stone skip away from like examining everything else.
So any sexual advice for newly out women?
The P-spot is great.
Okay.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to explore your prostate.
Uh-huh.
It's the G-spot.
Yeah, no, I mean,
so, like,
With hormones, that was a whole new like introduction to sex was the emotional part of it all and how like the little sensations.
My body is like definitely changed in that way, in the way that I experience sensation and things.
I'm
just like, oh my God, the back of my knee.
So did you have goals when you first transitioned, and have those goals changed?
For me, my goals were like the surgeries. When I say surgeries, right, I want the girls to know that you don't need to rush. I just got breast implants like last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Definitely my goal coming into like medically transitioning was to be able to shake my titties.
Oh my God.
I just want, you know. And just like when you're going down the stairs and you feel the weight.
I just have goals of, you know, living life and making it far. They say like, what, 3 to 5 years to your fully like on hormones that you've all your full like, you've developed fully. I mean, I've already done a letter writing group for FFS. Because to me, like, at least that'll be like my most affirming.
The narrative of like being born in the wrong body, I don't really like it. And I think that's generally the consensus. It's an easy, if flawed, way of describing it. It definitely puts the focus on trans suffering as being like innate. Like, no matter what is the situation, like, this person is flawed, I guess, biologically, and I just disagree with that entirely.
Yeah, totally.
Like, you have to correct your body to be trans. I would rather focus on, like, maybe the person was born in the wrong social society.
What would you like to hear from someone who has just accidentally misgendered you?
Just the correct gender and not any further discussion about it.
I hate the... Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry about this. Like, she. And I'm like, okay, just, you know, just correct yourself and let's keep it moving.
I know.
I'm not trying to be a spectacle.
Right? It's like, I'm just trying to get donuts, man.
Okay.
Like, I mean, and like, it's okay to fuck up. Like, I mean, we're all learning.
It reminds me of like walking into a room and someone asks for your pronouns and not anyone else's. And it's just like, I feel like you're outing me right now. And
no,
I am
really
very
is.
Uncomfortable with this situation.
Yeah. I guess if anything, I just like when people are like, thank you. Or like, thank you for correcting me.
What are some of your favorite pieces of media with authentic representation that everybody should watch?
Disclosure.
It's
the documentary. Yes.
That's such a great documentary for somebody that wants to educate themselves.
Definitely the show of Veneno. I feel like a lot of people resonated with that show too. Most of the cast was trans, or it had a lot of trans people in the cast.
Towards like the end of high school and everything, I was doing a lot of YouTube. My favorite videos were always like transition videos. Yeah. Even doing this is like, this is like, visibility is very important.
Mm-hmm. Robin Tran.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Also, shout out to Flame Monroe. She's an older Black trans woman. She has a special on Netflix.
So what mistakes did you make that I can avoid?
I think letting go of the idea that there's a wrong and right way to do it. I was in my 40s before I started transitioning and had a very eventful life before that. My memory is so full in the last 4 years, I barely even remember my life before. Be open to a whole new world.
I made the mistake of taking up a lot of space when I came out. But what that looks like, taking up a lot of space as a white trans woman, is like speaking about the trans woman experience as if your experience as a white trans woman is universal and just no real examination of how race plays into it or class or anything else.
What do you wish people knew about trans women?
Don't ask, have you had the surgery? You don't ask a cis woman, exactly. Did you get a hysterectomy?
Right. And I think people get caught up with the idea of like what we have rather than who we are. We're more than just our genitals. We're more than what we look like.
Trans women can breastfeed. That's something that you can
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like, it's nutritious?
Well, I haven't looked into that. For those who are medically transitioning, it's normal to lose a little bit of height as well. Our genitals, although they may at times look like men's genitals, they don't function like that. Listen to the trans woman if you're like hooking up with one. You can't just treat it like a guy's necessarily, even if they're not on hormones.
What is the best thing about being trans?
Oh my God, for me it's having titties, for sure.
Sisterhood.
One of the best things about being trans is just the agency that we have over our bodies to shapeshift, transform, literally transform. We hope that we have answered all y'all's questions.
If you're new to transition, DM me, I'll answer back.
Bye.
Bye.
I think we're really some special individuals because we really have to work inner with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And find that love and find all of the features that we have and love it and go out to the world and say, yes, this is me. And so I think that's what a lot of other people lack. And I think that's the issue. I think that's what they're really upset about because they're having a hard time with themselves.
Never know just what you've got. Till it's slipping through your fingers. Never know just what you've got till it's gone with the wind.
last one left beside you. You never miss your shadow until you're alone, alone in the dark.
Never notice what will break you until you're picking up the pieces. Never notice what will break you. Falls apart.
You never know how small your voice is. Do you scream it at the silence? Never know how small your voice is. Do you arguing with God?
Mai nau, mai hoki mai takata hui MVP Faf, Rainbow Whanau. You're tuned back into the Flat Out Pride Hour here on Free FM 89.0 Independent Community Media. Live stream and podcast us via freefmtalk.org.nz via the access.nz app, TuneIn app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify and iHeart Radio. Flat Out. Lady H on your mic for your Funky Friday. We love having you on board, whānau. If you've just joined us, we are on a flat out show tonight, this afternoon, evening, wherever you are in the aisle. Coming up for you, weekend events, what's hot and happening for your coming weekend. Pre-colonial attitudes to sex and gender fluidity. Interesting kōrero there. Compliments of the spin-off. So they interviewed Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri about that kaupapa kōrero. Up next, how queer characters have evolved in animations. So, a lot of our whānau into the creative arts and the different forms of media. So, I thought this was interesting to understand or to hear about what's happening and the evolution of us in animation. After that, we'll go into Abit Lava LaRue, G-O-Y-D. Stay tuned, I'm going to be back with you very soon.
We are gathered here today to celebrate Ruby and Sapphire.
You're looking at the first LGBTQ wedding in a kids' animated show. And this is the first kids' animated character who directly identify themselves as gay.
Yes, because I'm gay.
These are just a few examples in a recent push to include more queer representation in children's animated shows and movies. But it took a long time and a lot of work to get here, battling decades of harmful stereotypes and queer-coded villains.
You know, it was just a matter of not so much busting down these walls, but just very slowly chipping away at them for years and years and years and years.
Let's take a look at how we got to this from this. This is a scene from the 1933 animated Flip the Frog short, Soda Squirt. The flamboyant character turned hide-like monster pretty much sums up the extent to which queer characters appeared on screen at the time. A year later, in 1934, the Motion Picture Association of America started enforcing the Hays Code, which banned in films, quote, sex perversion or any inference to it. That was the same year the U.S. government established the Federal Communications Commission and the first set of commercial TV regulations. This created an era of internal censorship, out of fear of being hit with reprimands, fines, or having their broadcast license revoked. But creators did get creative, especially when it came to animated films.
People actually found a lot of ways of inserting queerness into cartoons and stretch the boundaries of the production code, because animation in itself is a medium that already lends itself to surrealness or strange situations.
Live-action TV couldn't show two men kissing, but a character like Bugs Bunny could kiss Hunter Elmer and pass it off as a joke. Speech patterns, mannerisms, costumes, and more also became signals of queerness, or queer coding. Let's take a look at Bugs Bunny again, who first appeared in 1940. In addition to kissing other male characters on the mouth, he also cross-dresses in many episodes. But this didn't make him queer. According to creator Chuck Jones, this was all meant to make him funny. Viewers, however, could have their own interpretation. RuPaul, for one, has said that Bugs Bunny was his first introduction to drag. Cartoon characters were also given the freedom to veer from traditional gender roles, so we could see characters like an effeminate bull who refused to fight, or a tea-sipping dragon. Queer coding may also have been a way around censorship, but it wasn't ideal and relied on harmful stereotypes. And as television grew in popularity, these stereotypes would play out again and again, sometimes in damaging ways. The 50s, a time known for conformity in the States and for the television cartoon boom. Both those things came into play with the Code of Practices for Television Broadcasters, a set of evolving guidelines that covered everything from decency and decorum to TV's responsibility towards children. The original 1952 code stated that sex crimes and abnormalities were unacceptable topics, and that shows should foster commonly accepted moral, social, and ethical ideals characteristic of American life. This was all happening with McCarthy's Lavender Scare in the backdrop, and it became visible on screen. Queer characters were no longer just a source of ridicule, but violently attacked, fueling a decades-long bury your gaze trope that persists today. Many popular characters were still coded from the 60s to the 80s, despite a sexual revolution and the start of the gay rights movement. But queer-coded characters were also increasingly cast as villains.
If you go with a classic hero versus villain model, the hero will embody what's normal, and then the villain has to be the opposite. And an easy way to suggest that is to draw on really obvious stereotypes that suggest queerness.
Let's look at the earliest entry in Insider's database that cataloged more than 200 confirmed LGBT characters. This is Skeleton, a villain in the 1980s show Super Ted. The creator confirms Skeleton's sexuality as gay in 2014.
Do you think I look best in diamonds or rubies?
Many iconic queer-coded Disney movie villains emerged in the late 80s and 90s. Ursula from The Little Mermaid was inspired by the drag queen Divine, and queer communities welcomed her with open arms.
Audiences may, in fact, embrace the villain over the hero because the villain offers an alternative vision of life or an alternative life path, and one that doesn't end in heterosexual romance.
Other characters like Gaston and LeFou from Beauty and the Beast and Jafar from Aladdin could have been influenced by their makers. They were created by Andreas Deja, an openly gay animator, and sang music written by openly gay lyricist Howard Ashman. But that sliver of representation had its downfalls.
If you can only exist as a villain or a joke, I mean, that's a really heavy thing to be saturated with as a kid.
And despite code improvements, networks were still hesitant to show any obvious representation.
The only safe way to refer to this king of darkness is simply him.
Animators described a culture of fear, with studios worried about losing advertisers and boycotts from conservative groups and angry parents. This fear was realized in 2005 with an episode of Postcards from Buster, an Arthur spin-off series. Sugar Time featured two lesbian moms, one of the earliest overt queer representations in children's animation. In response, Margaret Spellings, the then Secretary of Education, said PBS should strongly consider returning the funds used for the episode. It was a major setback for queer representation at the time. 14 years later, an episode of Arthur featured the anthropomorphic aardvark attending the wedding of his teacher, Mr. Ratburn, to his partner, Patrick. And strangely enough, we have the rise of cable TV and eventually streaming to thank for that. With fewer regulations and less government oversight, cable TV opened the door for more representation. But getting anything approved for children to watch, whether it was commercials for bike helmets or junk food, remained a long process, with requests having to go through 7 or 8 levels of approval. This could add extra hurdles for creators, and did for Rebecca Sugar during her time at Cartoon Network. In 2010, Rebecca was working on Adventure Time and floated the idea of a past lesbian relationship between Princess Bubblegum and the vampire Marceline. But even then,
it was pretty much impossible to have characters in an animated show that were openly LGBTQIA.
Pendleton Ward, the show's creator, supported this idea, but Rebecca said she faced years of pushback from the studio, which was concerned about distribution in countries where being gay or lesbian was censored in media and considered a crime.
When we tried to talk about it openly, the hammer came down, and they basically, it went all the way to the top and came down hard on us.
The character's relationship wasn't confirmed until 2018, when the two kissed in the season finale. After her experience with Adventure Time, Rebecca decided to create her own show and push the boundaries even further. We are the Crystal Gems. So in 2012, she started developing Steven Universe, about a gender non-conforming boy who is friends with extraterrestrial non-binary beings, or gems. In season 1, viewers learn the two of those gems are in love. But revealing this relationship was a slow process, and each step was a struggle with the network. Rebecca says she received specific feedback from Cartoon Network that the two characters couldn't kiss.
And it all became very disturbing. And realizing that I was sort of getting these direct notes, like, this really made me realize that I had been receiving that message indirectly from all of the content that I had seen growing up where LGBTQIA characters just aren't present. And they aren't present because they're being, you know, blocked from existence, you know, they're being systematically removed.
Their relationship was first hinted at in an episode called Jailbreak, which aired in March 2015, just as same-sex marriage was about to become legal in the U.S.
Even the audience members who were excited about it or who liked it would say things like, I can't believe you're getting these adult themes into your show. It was all treated as if it was very subversive. It's not that we snuck adult ideas into a children's show. I mean, children are flooded with heteronormative content all the time.
Most animated Disney films, like Sleeping Beauty, involve the love between a princess and a prince. Those scenes inspired Rebecca to create ones for queer audiences.
You know, I wanted to experiment with some of these really classic visuals.
In 2015, Rebecca says, studio executives told her it was her choice to make Ruby and Sapphire LGBTQ. They warned her that some countries might pull the show and it could get canceled altogether. But the next year, Rebecca came out as bisexual at San Diego Comic-Con and began to speak more publicly about LGBTQ issues, both in the industry and in her work.
It's really hard to twist yourself into a different person to make art. It was hard for me to try and make heteronormative art. And that's part of the reason I ultimately realized that I could come out and I could speak about this and that it was a part of who I am.
Coming out helped her speak more openly and advocate for her characters to be LGBTQ. And it paid off. In 2017, Steven Universe was nominated for the GLAAD Outstanding Comedy Series Award. And in 2019, it won in the Kids and Family category.
And then all of a sudden, it was the force of decades and decades of activism and advocacy were suddenly...
The first gay proposal and wedding episode aired in the summer of 2018 and made kids' animation history.
I now pronounce you Garnet!
Steven Universe was the start of a wave of animated shows with LGBTQ representation, and the rise of streaming apps would make that wave even bigger. Without FCC regulations or broadcast codes, and with fewer layers of approval, creators were given more autonomy with their characters. This is where we start seeing much more representation in animation, and not only with sexual orientation, but with gender identity and queer communities overall. Velma, from the original 1969 Scooby-Doo cartoon, was long read as gay before being officially written as a lesbian in a 2010 update, Mystery Incorporated. Benson, a leading character from Kipo and the Age of Wonder Beasts, made history as the first kids' animated character to directly identify as gay in dialogue.
Yes! Because I'm gay!
And Noelle Stevenson's She-Ra and the Princesses of Power featured a multi-season queer story arc, capped off in 2020 by a famous on-screen kiss between Adora and Catra. The show also broke ground by featuring a trans male character, Jewel Star, voiced by trans male actor Alex Blue Davis. From 2017 to 2019, our database showed a more than 200% spike in queer and gender minority characters in children's animated TV shows.
You need to have queer representation in children's animation because queer children exist and they deserve to see themselves on the screen. They deserve to see romance and happiness that represents the things that they already feel.
There are still some limitations to the progress, though. 90% of the characters are behind a paywall of some sort, preventing all children from equal access to LGBT representation. And the stories don't always do the characters justice. Shiro, the leader of the Paladins and Voltron Legendary Defender, was revealed to be gay at the 2018 San Diego Comic-Con, but his partner was killed off in the same episode he was introduced in, a controversial moment that played into negative tropes and didn't sit well with fans. But just like Rebecca Sugar pushed the boundaries in the past, a new generation of animators is raising the bar for the future.
What I hope for in the future is that more and more marginalized artists are going to be in a position to make the art that they want to make and to reach people with that art who can relate to it.
Nau mai hoki mai anō e te whānau, ngā whānau takatāwhi, MVP 5th, and Rainbow whānau. Wherever you are in Te Ao or in Aotearoa, nau mai hoki mai. Welcome and welcome back. Hope you enjoyed those last few segments. Questions newly out trans women have for experienced trans women. Compliments of as is. that beat transgender duet male and female voice Zoe Alexandria. That was that first beat. How queer characters have evolved in animations. And the last beat, Lava La Rue. Lava La Rue. G-O-Y-D. Up next, pre-colonial attitudes to sex and gender fluidity. Compliments of the spin-off interviewing Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri. Interesting kaupapa kōrero. And coming up, we've got weekend events and the beat to send you out on your Friday. Stay tuned, whānau. Back with you super soon.
Tēnā koe, Elizabeth. Nau mai. Te pai tuatahi. Nō hea koe.
He mokupuna au o te taira awhiti. Ko whānau ākai, ko Ngāti Onione, ko te aitanga Māhaki Okuna Iwi. So I come from the paradise of Gisborne, where I live now.
Kia ora. As Māori, what have we lost? What did the spectrum of sexuality and gender look like before colonisation?
We lost so much when the attack on our language and our culture, the loss of the gender fluidity that we might have had, and the loss of sex positivity that still exists in pockets around our country. I think I come from a place pretty sex positive, but only recently have different ones of us been taking up, saying, actually, this is as important. This is as much of who we are as our language, and this is a part of our culture.
Aye, because this is something that shapes strength and identity, right?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And if we forget where we came from and who we are, and we place all of this colonial, the homophobia, the biphobia, the transphobia on top of what that is, and we've completely lost and forgotten actually who our ancestors were and how they lived, that this was always a Māori thing.
What was the reaction when you came out to your community?
I was living in Dunedin with my mother when I came out. My family were really supportive. I hitchhiked from Dunedin to come to Gisborne to tell my great-grandmother, who was born in 1903. I had to try to explain to her what lesbian meant. She'd never heard that word. And I had to try and say, oh, I wanted to have a girlfriend. She goes, oh, yes, I've got girlfriends. Okay, no. And I, to the point where I had to say, actually, no, I'm going to try and find someone who's willing to have sex with me. Don't know who that might be, but there'll be a woman. And that's when she said to me, she goes, ah, like my aunties. My aunties, my distant tūpuna takatāpui, were living as couples inside our whānau, accepted and loved inside the whānau. When I said to my nan, what word did you call them? She goes, we didn't have a word. They're just part of the family. They're part of the whānau. And so that's a really important thing. I want our kids today, I want all of our people who identify in whatever gender, sexuality or their diverse sex characteristics to just feel normal.
That's all anyone wants.
Yeah, low bar. Yeah. Low bar, but apparently really hard to achieve.
Yeah, really hard for some of the nosier people out there. One of the stories in your thesis is about a young missionary called William Yates, who was sent home for bad behaviour with young Māori men.
Many Māori men. So he was a missionary who was over here and he got into trouble. He actually got in trouble on the boats coming over for his dalliances. He got taken to court because, of course, the British brought their laws that said now this is illegal, something we had no problem with. So we pretty much ignored the fact that they thought it was illegal. And so when they went to court, the whānau and even those young men themselves just did not have a problem with it.
Aye.
Two things we learned from that. One, that we didn't have a problem with it. But two, we had no punishment for it. And that's how we know that our people, that it was accepted.
Aye.
And it was kind of a bit ordinary.
And I gathered from some of the things that I read that actually being good at sex was something that people took a lot of pride in.
That's
because
right.
You could practice with different partners and identify how you wanted. So then you were like, I'm a bit good at this.
Yeah. I mean, it's a joyful thing when you find a diary entry of some sailor complaining because a Māori woman told them they weren't good enough.
That's amazing. Like,
yeah, do some work.
Yeah. We don't need any more proof than that. We knew what we wanted and how to get it. Did any of these narratives sort of end up in our raranga, ngā whakairo, other mahiaranga that we can sort of see visually?
Absolutely, those stories, because this, we're oral traditions. There's all our stories were woven, carved, and sung. You go in any whare in this country, there's sex positivity happening on the walls.
Right.
Recently, I found on one of our marae at home as an example of someone who absolutely appears to be intersex. The carving very clearly shows that up the top is male and at the bottom is female. Those were the stories. This is the real life, and it is preserved for us in wood.
That is amazing. That's
it's fully amazing. When I found it, I flipped
awesome
out.
Awesome corduroy. I bet.
Flipped out.
I bet.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
It's a shame that you can't love me much as I do. Ooh, it's a shame that you can't love me much as I do. Love you, even though you won't. Love you forever. Yes, it's forever. Even though you won't. Love you forever. Yes.
Mahara mai, nau mai hoki mai, ka hukura, Rainbow, MVP, Faf, whānau. You're tuning back into the Flat Out Pride Hour here on Free FM, 89.0 Independent Community Media. Live stream and podcast to us via freefm.org.nz, the accessmedia.nz app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify and iHeartRadio. Flat Out. A big flat out shout out to New Zealand on air. Without you, access radio stations like Free FM wouldn't be here. A big flat-out shout-out to Free FM. Without you, Flat Out Pride wouldn't be here. And last but not least, a big flat-out to you fabulous listeners, you, for tuning in every Friday to hear what's hot and happening on our show, the show that is for and about us, the Glit Fab Rainbow Whānau. We're rolling into what is hot and happening for your coming weekend. That must be there for Forever Love by Aradhana. Always a classic, that one, eh, whānau. What did you think of the kōrero from Dr. Elizabeth Kirikiri? Interesting, eh? And also the sharing or stories from our transgender whānau. That's really interesting, quite different. I was buzzed out by that waiata by Zoe Alexandria. The two tones or the change of three octaves are amazing. Blew me away. Hui anō, let's get into what's hot and happening for your coming weekend. So yeah, for your Friday, the 14th of April, it is April whānau, we have got Dubscape for the whole weekend at Soulscape. That's 611 Wainui Road in Raglan. Skanking and camping is the theme. Ticketfairy.com to get your ticks. Pink Parade of Nations, IBC PC Dragon Boat Festival. This is at Victoria Square in Cambridge. Nice. And this is in celebration or acknowledgement of breast cancer survivors in the Pink Pride of Nations. Cool. Cool, cool, cool. Roller Disco Whangaparoa. That's 157 Brightside Road in Stanmore Bay. Fun. You can get a lesson and then at 4:30 and then 5:30 is the actual roller disco. The Ōtautahi Sound System Culture Documentary Exhibition. Now, if you're into a muso and you like art, well, this is for you. 6 Carlisle Street in Christchurch, whānau. Yes, yes, and yes. Board Game Club at Escapist NZ. That's 2 bar 36 Bryce Street in Hamilton. Ketamine Delightfully Camp is at Sky City. And that's in our very own H-Town, 346 Victoria Street. Get your tickets from eventfinder.co.nz. Oh, fun. So this is the winter season of season one. So Miss Ketamine from RuPaul Drag Race Down Under on a spectacular 90-minute whirlwind of pop parodies, stand-up hilarities, and finally, mental clarities, as she gives you a giddy glimpse into the mind of a strange lady. Fun. Soul Music Night event by Midnight Christchurch. That's at 357 Colombo in Christchurch. Oh yes, spinning vinyl at midnight. An awesome night of classics. No Homo Queer Comedy April at Basement Theatre. That's Lower Grays Ave in Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland. Get your tickets from iticket.co.nz. Nice, nice. Like me some live comedy. Audio Jack UK, Greg Churchill, Finn Jackson, and Stanley at Ink Bar, 268 K Road. Tickets under the radar, and that's all one word, all lowercase. That's radar, DAR.co.nz. For your set day, Wellington's Women's Lifestyle Expo is on at the TSB Bank Arena. Get your tickets from bit.ly. That's Queen's Wharf in Williwood. Eclectic Market at the Waihi Memorial Hall from 9 a.m. Now that market's the third Saturday of every month, so get along to get your homegrown stuff there. Who's your daddy? Drag King Supremacy at Ivy Bar and Cabaret in Wellington, 63 Cuba Street in Te Aroa. Tickets from bit.ly. Fun. Wellington's leading men will woo you. They will serenade you and they will make you forget all of your daddy issues or perhaps create new ones. Ha ha ha, funny. Plant Fest Autumn at Tauranga Racecourse. Get your tickets from eventbrite.co.nz. And for your Sunday, oh, so that is also Sunday. Continuing on your Sunday, Drag Storytime with Ruby Dax and friends at Te Manawa Museum of Art, Science and Heritage, 326 Main Street in Palmerston North. Yas from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Palmy drag icon Ruby Dax and some fabulous friends will be at the museum reading all the best children's stories. Entry is free, suitable for all ages in association with Malgra. Still on your Sunday, picnic and pooches in the park at Inners Common, Hamilton Lake, and this is hosted by Hamilton Pride Inc. So their official launch for this year's Pride celebration, the year is 10. Their theme, Love is Love Since Signing of the Marriage Equality Bill. Wow, 10 years. Would you even know it, eh, whānau? Still on your Sunday, Hauraki Whānau Day featuring Whitechapel Jack at the Pairoa Domain. Oh, yes. Love me a bit of Whitechapel Jack. That's 1 p.m. if you can get there. Monday the 17th, there's an official 10-year marriage equality lighting ceremony at Garden Place, 355 Victoria Street. Go along and join Hamilton Pride, Sky City, Hamilton, as we celebrate 10 years since signing of the Marriage Equality Bill. So 8 o'clock, the lights outside Sky City will be turned on in our Pride colours. Aww. Following the illumination, follow the whānau into Navarra Lounge for the Love is Love cocktail party. Oh yes. And there we go, the cocktail party at Navarra Lounge. That's basement 266 Victoria Street. Oh yeah. Then Tuesday, meet the Hamilton Pride Committee. So jump on Zoom and meet the whānau. Ask any questions that you have, any suggestions you want to bring. They're open to all feedback and input. The more the merrier. Thursday is the 20th, is the Wakaama Long Distance Nationals in Whitianga. Campground Rainbow Comedy Night at Ivy Bar and Cabaret, 63 Cuba Street, Te Aro Wellawood. And get your tickets from eventfinder.co.nz. Taka Thursdays at the Elephant Wrestler. And that is what's hot and happening for your coming weekend. Kia ora te whānau. Hope you enjoyed the show. The Beats, the Kaupapa Kōrero, and I'm going to leave you with a tune, Green Light by Goddard featuring Megan Linnell. Quite like the build up on this beat, and it's definitely a good one to kickstart your Friday. Love, light, and laughter out to y'all. Be safe, whānau, be safe on the streets and in the sheets. Condoms and lube are your safest form of protection. Take care of your whānau wherever you are. Across the other side of the world, it's summer. And for some, it's autumn. Here it is winter. COVID is still very real, still very rampant. Take care of yourselves out there, whānau. Keep it real. A te ra wiki, ne? Mā te wā.
Thanks for listening to this Free FM podcast. If you want to hear more content like this, you can support Free FM via Patreon. Head to patreon.com/freefm89 to find out more.